taking the over or under? What about the favorite or the underdog? There's a lot to break down for your sports betting pleasure. This is The Money Line with your hosts, Ryan Porth and Chase McCabe, powered by TwinSpire Sportsbook on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Welcome into The Money Line here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe, Elijah Campbell in for Ryan Porth this week, and it's all powered by TwinSpire Sportsbook. So be sure to check that out, and we are here every Friday at 6 o'clock, albeit a little bit of a breather last week because of all the wedding stuff that Ryan and I were involved in. But back at it. Elijah, good to see you. Good to have you.
Yeah, nice to be back at it again. I love filling in. I like to think of myself as a pretty decent relief pitcher, so anytime I get the call to the bullpen, I never hesitate to pick the phone up and jot it out there and do my thing.
Yeah, you're good at that. I mean, you got the look, too. You got, like, the 1970s pitcher look going. Raleigh fingers, basically.
Very Raleigh fingers. I like to think a little bit of Dennis Eckersley.
Oh, there's Solis and Mac in there.
And that's why I kept the sideburns here. I go full mustache. I shave everything else, but I keep the sideburns, and I haven't gotten a haircut in over a year. So
yeah,
it's like if there's, like, a three-way mix of Dennis Eckersley, George Harrison, and Raleigh fingers, I think that I would like to fit into all of that.
You do have some George Harrison going.
And an Adam Morrison honorable mention. I can't go a show without mentioning the name of Adam Morrison. So yeah, if I can conjure that, I'm going to.
You are late to post-Beatles George Harrison.
Exactly. This is post-India trip George Harrison.
I'd like to think this is when he got very creative.
Exactly. When he started to use some performance enhancers of creativity.
Yeah.
That kind of George Harrison. For those familiar with the Beatles timeline, that specific George Harrison is what I'm shooting
for. He made good music. So
fantastic music.
No doubt about that. But we're not here to talk about music. We are here to talk about all the odds. We'll get to cash or trash and our parlays, all the things that you're used to. But I want to start with this because the big topic around town this week has been Julio Jones and the Tennessee Titans. Will the Atlanta Falcons trade Julio Jones to the Tennessee Titans? So what does that have to do with betting? Well, there are odds for everything. I mean, there are odds for if I'm going to meet the woman of my dreams this weekend.
Oh, what are those odds?
Not very good. Probably plus 25,000.
Hey, it's going to be some good value there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good value there. But CBS Sportsline has been keeping up to date with this. And right now, the Tennessee Titans are the favorite to land Julio Jones at plus 200. The Patriots are plus 300. The Seahawks plus 400. 49ers plus 500. We've heard reports that, you know, there are some teams pulling out, those being on that list. The Raiders at plus 600. The Eagles plus 700. The Ravens that have reportedly pulled out plus 900. And then the Packers and Colts at plus 1,000 to land the services of Julio Jones. So according to Sportsline, the Titans are the favorite. So I think about this, and right now, looking at different books, I've seen pretty much the same odds. The Titans are plus 130 to win the AFC South this year, with the Colts coming in as the favorite. And of course, you know, while I'm saying that, I just closed the I hit the wrong button and I closed the odds there. But I wonder, and I'll ask you, Elijah, if they land Julio Jones, because you always say, well, one player is not going to make a ton of difference. It depends on who that player is. I think the fans of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would argue that point, even though, yes, they added AB, they added Gronk as well. They added Leonard Fournette. But they probably don't add, we know they don't add Gronk, but they don't add the rest without Brady. Mm-hmm. So one player can make a ton of difference. The Titans players, AJ Brown being one of them, they all want Julio Jones. So how big of a difference could Julio make with odds makers if he joins the Titans on them winning just the division?
It should be everything. And here's why. The Titans offense last year was what a top two or three offense in the entire league.
Yep.
And that's with having A.J. Brown as your presumed number one, Corey Davis, who was the clear-cut number two, but, I mean, could take over games when needed, whenever the attention was on AJ. And then, of course, you have the best running back in the league, the running back who ran for 2,000 yards. And if he's on that same pace this year, which we're not sure of, but if assuming he is, he could break a record for yards in a season, assuming he plays all 17 games. What Julio Jones does, since you lost Corey Davis, it gives you that extra wide receiver option. And it helps, like, when you're quote-unquote second wide receiver option, because last year, A.J. Brown had a better season than Julio Jones. Julio had a little bit of an injury problem, and we can even go on the presumption that Julio Jones is playing at 70 to 75%, because you don't want the expectation of a 32-year-old former All-Pro receiver to be that he is his best years are right now, because realistically they're not, but how far off is that is the main question.
What's the decline?
Exactly,
like, you assume he's on the decline, but what exactly is the decline?
And if we assume that it was even this past year, if he was healthy enough to play all 16 games, I get it. If ifs and ands were pots and pans, the world would be a kitchen. But Julio Jones was still 732-yard receiver, even in the limited amount of time that he had, still a high rate of yards per catch. You're still getting a lot of good productivity when he's on the field. And the one thing the Titans don't have right now is that solid number two receiver.
Yeah.
Well, think of all the attention that's going to be taken, because you can't play soft coverage on Julio Jones, because even at 32, even with some of his injury problems, he could still kill you. I mean, He's still, that Atlanta Falcons offense wasn't the reason the Atlanta Falcons weren't very good.
No.
And I mean, you can even say that the reason the offense declined for them in the back half of the year was because of Julio's availability. He made a huge difference on that offense.
He was on pace for at least 1,300.
For another season. Yeah. And Dan Orlovsky, I can't remember the stat off the top of my head, but he tweeted out like what Matt Ryan's quarterback rating was when Julio was on the field and when Julio was off the field. And it's a drastic difference. Why this is big for the Titans, not only you're getting that guy and his production that comes with him, but you're taking the attention off A.J. Brown. Because if right now, if you take the Tennessee Titans offense as constructed, who you got to pay attention to on the outside? A.J. Brown. You can take all the secondary attention on him as possible. What Josh Reynolds can do with that, we're not 100% sure, because he played in an offense that had a log jam at receiver when he was in Los Angeles playing with the Rams. What Julio Jones does now is you got to single cover A.J. Brown. You might have to press A.J. Brown, and because you know on the other side of the field is another 1,000-yard receiver when fully healthy. You can't stack the box anymore for Derrick Henry. What did teams do for the Titans? No offense faced as many stack boxes as the Titans did. No running back faced as many stack boxes as Derrick Henry did, and he still ran for all of that. So imagine the production you can get from Derrick Henry when the box isn't stacked for a majority of the game. You have to be able to respect those outside weapons. Ryan Tannehill is playing the best football he has ever played in his life. We are experiencing peak Ryan Tannehill. That's only going to make life easier for him as well, because on the plays that they do have to stack the box, you have easy coverages on the outside for your weapons to go. That offense would only get better. I wouldn't even care about the lack of talent, quote-unquote, at tight end. Firkser's a good security blanket. That's not going to be a deficiency that kills you. This offense will still be just as good, in my opinion,
if you get Julio.
Better. If you get Julio. Yeah. It's going to make Firkser better. It's going to make A.J. Brown better. It's going to make Derrick Henry's stats better, his productivity better, and how about this? You could save Derrick Henry. You're playing an extra game this year. It's not like Derrick Henry hasn't had the ball a lot. His workload has been unparalleled to any player in football right now on the offensive end. So if you can save a couple carries from Derrick Henry, why wouldn't you? And have him as fresh as he can be for the playoffs while also being as productive as he can be in the regular season. That makes a world of difference on this team. And outside the Chiefs, tell me a better offense in the AFC. It's hard to think of one off the top of my head.
Yeah. Well, and think about this, too. If that happens, your four receivers for the Titans are A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Reynolds, and then fighting it out for that fourth spot, Des Fitzpatrick is in there, Cam Batson's in
slot
there.
Slot options. Good, fast slot options.
They have McMath, the kid out of LSU they just drafted. They got a ton of receivers on the roster right now that are going to fight for, and they'll probably carry five, if I had to guess. So fight for the fourth and the fifth spot. But there'll be room. Cody Hollister, who's hung around. You know, they brought Kalijah Lipscomb in. He'll be in camp. So they would have a ton of options there. I just look at it like this. And I've heard the argument of, well, and we've had it on our show, Darren, Donick, and Chase, you know, of, well, why you're basically going to end up paying the same amount you could have kept Corey Davis for. Why didn't you just keep Corey Davis? Well, number one, Julio Jones and Corey Davis are in two different hemispheres. Mm-hmm. Number two, you know, the other thing is, well, why would you go to all this trouble to move money around to bring Julio? If they really, really, really wanted to keep Corey Davis, they could have.
They found a way.
They could have figured it out. But eventually, it's just kind of like, meh, I think I can do better. Now, mm-hmm. you can't always. You know, if they miss out on this, and we'll see what Josh Reynolds is, because right now they don't know, and see what Des Fitzpatrick, who's a fourth-round pick, you know, becomes. They don't know. You may not do better. But the gamble is, if I'm going to pay that kind of money, I would rather pay that kind of money for a caliber of receiver like Julio Jones. So I think that, you know, that you just have to certainly figure out. But the Titans, plus 200, the favorite to land Julio Jones. And as I said, plus 130 to win the division right now. The Colts are the favorite to win the division at minus 106. I think that the moment this team lands Julio Jones, they become the favorite.
They will be leapfrogging Indianapolis, as they should.
And they totally will be leapfrogging Indianapolis. Now, you know, the other odds that you have to look at when you're thinking about the NFL and how it pertains to the Titans to win the Super Bowl, plus 4,000. I think that changes.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not a lot, but it changes.
A little bit.
Because right now, they're in a group with Arizona, Minnesota, and Pittsburgh all at plus 4,000. The Chargers are just ahead of them at plus 3,300. The Patriots are ahead of them at plus 3,000. I think they move around where the Patriots. The Saints are at plus 2,800. Like, what are these people drinking? I want some.
The greatest quarterback of all time, Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston going to eat some dubs.
What Tim Tebow was supposed to be. Taysom Hill is.
I know. Do you think that not to get off on a tangent, but Tebow looks at what Taysom Hill's done and goes, Where did I go wrong?
Where did this go wrong? Why didn't Sean Payton become my coach or offensive coordinator and put me in this? Because that really is what it comes down to. It's not like Taysom Hill's the greatest passer in the world, but he's utilized to his strengths the way good coaches do to all players, not just the good ones.
Yes. So it is the money line driven by Twin Spire Sportsbook, Chase McCabe, Elijah Campbell, who is in for Ryan Porth this evening. When we come, we're still going to have Cash or Trash, but we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. Elijah is going to give us his guide to betting the NBA this weekend because he is our resident association expert. So we will do that plus Cash or Trash when we come back here on the Money Line, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're back here on the Money Line, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's driven by Twin Spire Sportsbook. If I could spit that out. Chase McCabe, Elijah Campbell here with you on a Friday night, here every Friday at 6. Before we get to Cash or Trash, I got a few this week that I'll throw at Elijah. We're going to look at the association, the NBA, the playoffs going on right now, and his guide to betting the NBA this weekend. We've had some fun series so far. I'm looking forward to the game that's coming up later on tonight, and you can actually hear that on ESPN 102.5, the game starting at 8 o'clock after the Talking with TD podcast. But Luka and the Mavs taking on the Clippers and Kawhi and company.
What a series. What a series that one's been.
Luka's just so much fun to watch.
He's a prodigy. And like, real quick, one of the things that used to really irk me about quote-unquote NBA draft Twitter is that not a lot of people like to watch the foreign guys. So I remember going back to that draft when it was like Luka Doncic could be the number one pick. The Phoenix Suns hire Luka Doncic, his old coach from the Croatian or Slovenian national team. And the reaction was, oh, it's a bust, it's a bust, it's a bust. Well, this kid was the MVP of the second best league in the world at the age of like 17. This guy was born to be this all-pro caliber guy. And it took a lot of people by surprise. And of course, I get not everybody's watching Real Madrid basketball, but like this kid's been one of the more dominant players and point guards on the planet since he was a teenager.
Yeah.
It's awesome to see what he's become in the NBA right now. And I mean, I was telling you earlier today, Chase, his three-point percentage gets a little better. This guy could win three or four MVPs in his career.
So tonight, the numbers for this one, it opened at L.A. minus three. That line has moved to 2.5. So Dallas getting 2.5. According to Covers.com, 54% are on the Mavs at home.
That's interesting.
Plus the 2.5. The over-under on this one, 216.5. That hasn't moved. So what do you think about this matchup tonight?
Tonight, so if you want to talk about trends, the home team has not won a game in this series yet. And some of these, especially game four, really wasn't even close. I know the Clippers really, the loss against the Mavs in game five for them has to be incredibly disappointing because you thought you finally had them figured out. And that, like, it's been a coaching chess match. I mean, Rick Carlisle and the Mavericks offense, which is their forte. They're not a great defensive team. We're not going to pretend like they're a great defensive team. Really figured out how to get just enough stops on the Clippers and be able to score against their defense, which is one of the best in the NBA. Still, the Clippers are a phenomenal defensive team. Any team that has Paul George and Kawhi Leonard is going to be a fantastic defensive team. Just when you think they had that defense figured out, they get up 19 in game three, and then Ty Lue makes a defensive adjustment to be able to get the ball out of Luka's hands earlier in the shot clock and make him play more off ball. Well, that worked well enough for them to erase that 19-point deficit in game three and then come out in game four and beat the brakes off of them in Dallas. So you think, okay, well, this series is over, right? No way Dallas gets back into the series. And then what does Rick Carlisle do? As the most underrated coach in the NBA this era, makes an adjustment. The Mavs figure it out. They're able to score just enough points down the stretch. Clippers having some lapse defensively when guarding Luka, and they have a 3-2 series lead. What I'm looking for tonight in this one is to see another defensive adjustment from Los Angeles. I'm looking for them to maybe trap a little more towards the half court, do some soft traps, whatever it can to get Luka Doncic and the ball out of his hands and make him work more off ball. That's been the key to their success. I think they do end up figuring that out. And I also, like I said, I like the trend of the road teams. I mean, that's happened in the NBA several times. Going into last night, the home teams are only about two or three games above 500. So home court advantage in the NBA playoffs this season hasn't been what it was in the past. We can forget about last year because no one was home last year. But in past years, home teams had a relatively significant advantage. It's not that obvious this season because I feel like the parity in the NBA is at the highest it's been in the last two decades. So I see the public being like in on Dallas is a little surprising to me, but I would look for the Clippers to cover that 2.5, and we're going to a game seven.
What are these series? So you think it's going to be a game seven?
Exactly. Mostly because when you get in these games too, these do or die situations, and I know Paul George has this awful moniker that I hate for him because I think he is a fantastic player. He has struggled in the playoffs mightily the last two seasons. This year, you saw it the first three games, second half of game three, all of game four. And I didn't think he was atrocious in game five. But give me the team that has the better defensive length, the better defensive versatility. And when your stars struggle, who has the best shot creators and shot makers around you? The Clippers just have more of that. I think that's what it's going to come down to. The better effective field goal shooting team usually wins these games a majority of the time. And the Clippers, ranking third in the NBA in effective field goal shooting. The law of averages, to me, against a much lesser defensive team in Dallas, means it's going to go up. And not only do I think the Clippers win this game, they're going to end up winning the series.
Well, and if either way, you're going to hear a game on our airwaves on Sunday, starting at 2:30, it'll either be a game seven, or if the Mavs win tonight, it will be their first round matchup against the Utah Jazz. So looking forward to that one tonight and, of course, this weekend. Tomorrow, the Bucks and the Nets get it underway. And we were talking this morning. Mm-hmm. You are so hyped for this.
This is going to be potentially the series of the playoffs. Why? Because why this early? Because the Sixers being the one seed, I mean, assuming they're healthy, will give both of these teams a run for their money. Either of these teams run for money, whichever one wins, because I feel like the Sixers should dismantle the Hawks, but that's also dependent on Joel Embiid's health. But this one, I think the winner of this series wins the Eastern Conference and probably wins the entire thing. These teams, these teams are two. So when I'm betting basketball, I like to really go into specific numbers, ignoring some of the players on the team. What are these teams' numbers? What are their habits? And one thing I did learn, and what my opinion is, the best basketball book ever written, Basketball on Paper by Dean Oliver, fantastic book. The four factors of basketball, who teams are, and these are, if you, I guess, win these aspects of a basketball game, you're more than likely to win. And the two being the heaviest, and that's effective field goal shooting. How effective are you from the field at twos and threes? Because that stat weighs in threes being more than twos. Offensive rebound percentage, turnover percentage, and free throw rate. Effective field goal percentage, I think teams win. It's like if you win the effective field goal battle, you're winning almost 60% of the time. These are the two best effective field goal shooting teams in the entire NBA all year long. And defensively, they're also top 10 as well. So really, these are the two best offenses. And if you ask me, the Bucks defensively are probably the most dangerous team in the NBA based off their length. If there's any team that's going to give the Nets trouble, it's going to be the team that has the most defensive versatility. Jrue Holiday should be first team All-NBA this year. Giannis Antetokounmpo probably won't win Defensive Player of the Year, but will be all first team, all defense this year in the NBA as well. They traded for P.J. Tucker, who provides a lot of defensive length. You can play small with him, as you saw in Houston, where he was their center, and they were still winning some series inside the bubble. This team defensively has everything you need. The injury to Dante DiVincenzo hurts a little bit, but they're also a fantastic three-point shooting team, one of the best three-point shooting teams in basketball. And then, of course, I don't even have to go into much detail because we all know what the Brooklyn Nets are. You have Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, multiple MVPs, multiple champions on that team. They signed Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin's had a little bit of an offensive resurgence because we thought his legs were dead when he played in Detroit, and I guess that's just the Detroit Pistons factor playing itself at hand. But you have the best roster in the NBA against what I think is the most versatile team in the NBA, and you can still make a case that Giannis Antetokounmpo is the best player in the NBA. Still, he's gotten to the point now where he probably could win the MVP every year. He's getting LeBron treatment where you win two in a row, and Steph Curry as well. You win two in a row, you're going to have to do something exceptional to be able to win that award. That's why I like the Bucks, not only to win the series, I think they're going to eventually win the East. I think they're going to win the whole thing. They're my favorite team in the NBA right now. And this series, I am hoping, goes seven, because this is the tail of the tape.
I can tell that you're excited about it. Here's some numbers for you for game one. And you can hear that tomorrow starting with coverage starting at 6 on ESPN 102.5, the game. 61% on the home team, on Brooklyn, right now. This line opened at Brooklyn minus 3.5. It's been as high as 5 and come back down, according to FanDuel. I was looking at some numbers from FanDuel. So it has been all over the place. And is actually now at minus 4 in some places. So I'm seeing 3.5 and 4, depending on the book that you're looking at. So only 39% on Milwaukee. It's funny that you bring up the Bucks winning the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of transition into cash or trash. That is the perfect transition into cash or trash, and I think I know your answer. Because I was looking at NBA championship odds before the show. The Bucks to win it all plus 550. And I love that value. Based on what you said, I love it even more. Mm-hmm. Because if they get through this series, not that it's easy ever, but it gets easier.
This is the biggest matchup problem for the Bucks.
Now, Utah, if Utah comes out of the West,
dangerous as well.
Very dangerous. And like Milwaukee versus Utah could be a lot of fun.
The Jazz and the effective field goal shooting. They're the only team in the NBA that's top 5 in both offensive effective field goal shooting and holding teams to slow defensive effective field goal shooting.
So I assume you say that's cash.
Very much so. I remember we did futures last time I was on here with Ryan Porth. I said my futures bet, the best futures one in terms of value is Bucks, and at the time was plus 900. Is now to 550.
Yeah,
I said hammer that one home because team can shoot threes. They're versatile defensively, so you can't just matchup hunt on them all night. Mike Budenholzer is a great coach. I think he's learned lessons from last year's team that underachieved because he got a little too cute with the minute distribution. I think those lessons have been learned, It's still at 550 now. That's fantastic value. Cash it.
All right, real quick before, just give me something quick on both of these before we get into the rest of cash or trash. Hawks 76ers getting underway, right?
That will start this weekend. It's going to be dependent on Joel Embiid's health. But even if Joel Embiid misses the first, say, four games of the series, Philly's winning at least three. I could see the Hawks maybe stealing one because they're number one in the league in free throw rate and mostly contributed to Trae Young because he is a foul magnet.
But the Hawks are amazing. I mean, the Hawks
they're
and,
fun.
The Hawks
they're
and the Preds fun. Have a similar season.
Yeah, oh,
because things were off the rails and they made a coaching change and then look at what they did.
Nate McMillan in a lot better position now in Atlanta than he was when Indiana fired him. I bet they learned that lesson. The grass isn't always greener when you want to fire the coach after a disappointing playoff run. That's neither here nor there. So as much as I love watching this Hawks team, this is the year the Sixers finally beefed up their three-point shooting by adding Seth Curry, who, I mean, single-handedly shut out the Wizards. I mean, there's a reason he is, like, the number one. I think he still has Steph by, like, 10, like a small slimmer of a percentage point over Steph as the greatest or most efficient three-point shooter of all time. I mean, they added Danny Green. Danny Green's looked like he's been in old Danny Green form. They added the shooters they didn't have last year that kept them from winning games. They shed some of the unnecessary size they had, i.e. Al Horford. I still really like the Sixers team, even without Joel Embiid, to take the first three or four from Atlanta. This thing shouldn't go more than five.
And then, let's see, Denver, they're the Nuggets. They will be at the Suns from Phoenix.
So,
when Lakers, where are the Lakers? I see the Clippers.
I think that one's going to start LeBron. Sunday or Monday.
LeBron. What happened to LeBron?
For the first time in LeBron James's career, he's not playing in the second round. Only the second time in the past decade and a half that we're not talking about any LeBron
James. Is that right?
Team. Yeah.
Because they missed a couple years ago.
And he
missed his rookie year.
Yep.
But he's never not made, when he's been in the playoffs, he's never not made it out of the first.
This is his first career first round loss. He has never lost in the first round. And of course, even those really bad Cavaliers surrounding cast in his early, those early years still had the Wizards to beat up on.
Think about that, though. That's a telling stat, but he's played since, 03 was his rookie year. And he's missed the playoffs twice. That's it. Twice. But the fact that
most of those years.
But the fact that, you know, they're coming off the title and
only 70 days of rest.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that they've been beat up. He's been hurt. AD's been hurt.
He gave it a good 5 minutes. AD gave it the best 5 minutes he could last night before re-injuring himself.
Yeah. So, well, not a surprise there. So there you go, Elijah's guide to NBA betting. Let's finish cash or trash real quick. Only got three tonight because this is Ryan's specialty, so I don't want to take all his thunder.
That's right. He's a specialist. We're just trying to fill in the best we can.
Let's see. So I gave you the Bucks to win the NBA championship plus 550. Here's one out of the NFL, and I don't know why this caught my eye, but it did. NFL comeback player of the year.
Ooh, I love
and
this.
You may think, like, okay, whatever. What? All right. But there are some interesting names for NFL Comeback Player of the Year. The favorite, by a lot, should be a surprise to no one, Dak Prescott at plus 175.
Injury.
Coming back from the leg with the Cowboys. Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and one other player that I'll get to in just a second are plus 600. That's the next closest. The other player is the one that I think you should take at plus 600, because I think this team, while they're not going to go win at all, I believe they're going to be better than people might think they're going to be in a division that really could go either way, where you could have three or four teams be good, or, you know, one win the division and be good and the rest, you just don't know. Talking about the AFC North and the Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow is plus 600 to win NFL Comeback Player of the Year, and I think you should take it.
Ooh.
Dak's the easy choice.
Okay.
But I think Burrow, in his second year, and what you hope is going to be his first full year, he's got his favorite wide receiver back with him from LSU and Ja'Marr Chase. They haven't done what all the things I thought they would do to that line, but they helped it a little bit.
Ignored it.
And they made some other moves in the offseason. I know a lot of people kind of look at Cincinnati as, you know, keep an eye out. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that? Plus 600 to win NFL Comeback Player of the Year for the Cincinnati Bengals. And they are, just for reference, they are last to win the North at plus 2,000. The Ravens are the favorite at plus 125, which I don't buy that at all. Cleveland plus 145. Steelers at plus 400 to win the AFC North. So what do you think about Burrow, NFL Comeback Player of the Year?
It's sexy, but I'm going to have to trash it because of that aforementioned offensive line that I felt like they did a poor job of addressing. They could have had an anchor of one of the best offensive linemen in the draft. Penei Sewell was on the board. They neglect to take him. The Lions take him seventh. Elijah Vera Tucker was on the board. I know he's a guard, but was the best guard in the draft. A lot of praise for him. And some people thought Rashawn Slater from Northwestern was just as good, if not better, than Sewell was. They had ample opportunity in that first round to be able to get someone to protect Joe Burrow, who got hit almost more than anybody in the NFL. And if the Kansas City Chiefs taught us anything, you can have all the weapons in the world, but you play a team with a good pass rush and you have a banged up and or poor offensive line, there's only so much your superstar quarterback can do. I don't think they addressed it well enough to give him the help he needs. Maybe they can go 5-12 or 6-11. Trying to do the math here with the 7-game schedule. It's ruined everything, my preconceived notions of NFL records and guessing them. But I don't think the offensive line was boosted well enough to get them over the hump, to give him the credit he deserves. I think Joe Burrow is going to be an incredible quarterback for years to come. Cincinnati is just going to have to learn this lesson the hard way of protecting your investments, and they're already starting to learn it with the injury that Burrow had last year. Fingers crossed it doesn't happen this year, but it's still going to affect his play regardless of how healthy he is.
All right, one more real quick. This one tonight, right up your alley, because and if Ryan was here, right up his as well, because it is a rivalry game. The Reds and the Cardinals, the over 8.5 is what I have tonight. Because you have Castillo, who has just not been very good this year.
He's been atrocious.
7.22 ERA, 1-8, versus Kim, a 3.65 ERA. But the Reds' offense, they're putting up an average of 4.93 runs per game. The Cards putting up an average of 4.35. So it's right there at it. And this actually opened at 8, and it moved to 8.5. So it's right there at it. But the thing that makes me think take the over, the Reds are giving up almost 6 runs a game. And with Castillo on the mound, I think that they could do that. So I like the over.
Oh, they could do that. I can't remember the last time I saw Castillo hit the strike zone. I mean, this guy's control
is supposed to be the guy.
He was the guy like 2 years ago. And last year, you can make the case that he was almost as good as Bauer, who won the Cy Young. The Reds are atrocious to watch pitching-wise at times. Castillo especially has been really hard to watch. Like I said, it's not like that he's just like giving up home runs all the time, which he's done a lot, but he's also walking everybody. So that's just a formula to give up a lot of runs. Heaven forbid he pitched 4 full innings. The Cardinals can get that 8 by themselves. The Reds have been hitting the tar off the ball. I mean, Winker and Castellanos are two guys that, if the season hit the All-Star break right now, could both be All-Stars. So cash that. That might be the easiest one you've given me.
Well, there you go. There is cash or trash, and we are way late to the break, but when we come back, we'll get into our parlays and futures of the week. Just parlays for me this week. We'll do that on the Money Line, driven by Twin Spires Sportsbook on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on the Money Line, driven by Twin Spires Sportsbook, ESPN 102.5 The Game, at you every Friday night at 6. Chase McCabe, Elijah Campbell here with you in for Ryan Porth this week as we are rolling right along. We'll get to parlays in just a second, but Weekend Winners is a segment that Robbie and Rex Rowe does every Friday. And Elijah, I think you slept like last Wednesday was the last time you slept, because you doubled up the last couple days, and we appreciate that. But you did the morning show and then our show, Darren Donick and Chase, and now this one. But you had some Weekend Winners, and I wanted you to share them with this audience real quick, and then I'll give you some thoughts.
And we're already off to a rough start, because two of the first two picks that we all shared between the three of us was the regionals that Vanderbilt and Tennessee are in college baseball, which started off today. I picked Vanderbilt to win Vanderbilt's regional here in Nashville. I picked Duke to win the Knoxville regional. That was the only dissent of the three of us on either of those, mostly because pitching and for anybody that's been a lifelong Tennessee Vols fan like I have been growing up near East Tennessee, you know that anything that can go wrong absolutely will go wrong when the team's actually really good and it's postseason time. So I went Duke on that. My lock of the week was Clippers over Mavs tonight in Game 6. I took the Bucks money line on Saturday in Game 1 against the Nets. I took the Sixers minus 2.5 in Game 1 against the Hawks. Take that whether or not Embiid is healthy and playing or not. And then lastly, I'm riding the hot hand with myself, and that is taking the Montreal Canadiens plus 1.5 against the Jets. I'm flirting with them, just taking them straight up.
I would take them straight up.
I think I would too for many reasons. There's no Mark Scheifele because
but they're gonna be pissed off for greatness.
They are, and angry Shea will be in full force tonight. I would not want to be Connor Hellebuck standing in the way of that mean slapper. Roll with the Canadiens. I'm not going away with what's worked with me in the NHL playoffs so far.
Yeah, I like it. That's good, and I think they take that series.
Oh, yeah. I think they definitely take the series in at least six games.
Let's get to some parlays. I got a couple to throw at you, and you're going to like this. So I like doing three-leggers. That's what I typically like to do.
My lucky number. Always do threes.
So I tried to go with a theme on this one, and that is Milwaukee. So I'm going Bucks plus 4 is what I was seeing it at earlier for tomorrow. So Bucks plus 4, the Brewers run line minus 1.5. Woodruff is pitching and he's been ridiculous. Insane. At 4-2 on the year, 1.27 ERA, taking on the Diamondbacks, and the Diamondbacks are just not very good. So the Milwaukee theme there, and I decided to stick with the Milwaukee theme and go with Tampa Bay because there is no connection whatsoever there. But you know, whatever.
It is now.
The Lightning minus 162 on the money line. I've enjoyed this series. Carolina's put up some fight. They won the other night in overtime, but they're outmatched not because of the skaters, but because of the goaltender. Vasilevskiy is just so freaking good that players like Aho and Staal just don't have an answer for him. And if he keeps playing like a brick wall, then he's going to probably backstop them at least to a matchup with Colorado, because as much as I love the Golden Knights, I think Colorado ultimately wins that series.
Oh, for sure.
And it's just going to be very difficult for Carolina to overcome. So give me the Lightning to go up 3-1 in the series as the third leg of that parlay. My second one, the aforementioned Golden Knights of Vegas. I do think they get it done tonight.
In game 3? Okay.
I think they get it done tonight. I think they get on the board. They get it done. And in the, it's back home. So that, I think, it really helps them out. Minus 107 for them tonight. And so Colorado leads that series 2-0, taking it. And it's been – game 2 was a lot of fun. Game 1, not so much. But game 2 was a lot of fun. I thought Marc-Andre Fleury was amazing. It just wasn't enough to get it done. But I do think they get on the board tonight, being back at home against Colorado. And so that is leg 1 of that one. I can't – it – there's a bad taste in my mouth with what I'm about to say, but Willie's Mets, the Metropolitans, plus 150 tonight against the Padres.
Okay.
Plus 150 tonight. Give me the Mets. You have they're going up against Blake Snell,
who hasn't been great.
Who hasn't been great, I know, because he's on my fantasy team.
Very disappointing.
Has not been good, and so I know they're plus 150. It's plus money. Chaser likes plus money. This is only a two-teamer, by the way. But the fact that Snell's been a little shaky, I'll take him.
Interesting.
So those are my two.
All right.
What do you got?
The one that I have is my obligatory baseball parlay of the night, always capping it off with the West Coast. And I'll start with that game right there. I want to take the Padres only money line because I don't trust Blake Snell. I also just don't trust the Mets. Hitting lineup is underperformed all year. Trust me, I know.
And they're hurt. I mean,
and they're hurt. And trust me, because Francisco Lindor is on my fantasy team, and he has not played very well all season long. And who also is on my team is Fernando Tatis, and he has been MVP level, as I figured. And I've been on Padres fever this year. One of my first appearance here on the money line, my future was Padres win the pennant, Tatis wins the MVP. And every game, it feels like every game that I bet the Padres, they always win. They're a hot baseball team. That's mm-hmm. my well right there. My money well in baseball is always the Padres. Give me the Padres against the Mets tonight. Sorry, Willie. White Sox.
Sorry, me.
Sorry, and sorry, you, especially since you're rolling with the Mets. The White Sox tonight. Also, Dallas Keuchel on the mound 10 minutes after we get off here, so you have to hop on this quick. Not buying the Spencer Turnbull magic for the Detroit Tigers. They're still an all-around bad baseball team. The White Sox might end up running away with that division. They are a very good baseball team.
Good for La Russa. Yeah, just inherit one.
You just inherit automatically the best team in your division, and then it just so happens the Twins, who are the, I guess, were the favorite this year for winning it last year, just so happen to be really, 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 really bad this year. Give me the White Sox minus 1.5, and then I'm going to go with the pitching money well this year, which has been the Milwaukee Brewers. I'll go with their game tonight. Since you took tomorrow, I'll take tonight. My man Freddie Peralta. Freddie Peralta's had a quiet, great season.
Former Nashville Sound.
That's right. Former Nashville Sound great, Freddie Peralta. Yep. I'm telling you, if this guy was on a team that didn't have Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns in the pitching rotation, we could talk about this guy being one of the better solid rotation pitchers in baseball. He's their number three guy, essentially. And he is an ace on most teams in the National League. Love Freddie Peralta this year. The Diamondbacks are an eyesore, and they just keep getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Give me the Brewers. So that's my three-team baseball parlay for tonight.
I like it. Very, very good. We'll see what happens, and especially with that Padres-Mets matchup that we're both invested in. When we come back here on The Money Line, we'll give you our locks of the week and wrap it up. You listen to The Money Line, driven by TwinSpire Sportsbook on ESPN 105 The Game. It's The Money Line, driven by TwinSpire Sportsbook, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Elijah Campbell hanging out with you, Ryan Porth, on his honeymoon. So congratulations to Ryan and Amanda.
Congratulations, Ryan.
Wrapping that up. Want to give a shout-out to an avid listener of The Money Line as well, and a good friend of mine, Ricky Merritt, just had a birthday.
Oh, so happy birthday, Rick,
as I know he enjoys listening every week and makes his notes and tweets him out a lot, his bets. So happy birthday, my man. We'll get to our locks of the week here in just a few minutes. But we started the show talking about Julio. Mm-hmm. When do we think this happens?
It'll happen before you're back on doing this show next week.
You think by the time this show happens next week, he's traded?
Si, senor. I said that that was one of my called shots this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, was that I can't tell you what team he's going to go to. But I can tell you he's going to be gone from Atlanta by the time Friday rolls around next week. Just a hunch.
Interesting. I mean, I could see it. Because I said it today on Darren Donica Chase, I don't know if there's it's got to be done tomorrow. I don't think that it's that. But the sooner you can get it done, the better. Because Atlanta's got to pay their rookies.
Yeah.
That
thing's ticking.
Right. So they got to do that. And the team acquiring him, you would like to get him in and acclimated. Todd Downing's new offensive coordinator for the Titans. So he's dealing with that stuff. And if he acquire, if they bring in Golden Tate, okay, great. You know, we can work with Golden Tate.
It helps you, makes you better.
It helps you. No disrespect to Golden Tate at all. But Julio changes the offense. And you're already tweaking the offense with a new play caller. Mm-hmm. So he really changes the offense and schemes with what he's able to do. So the sooner you can get him in, the better. I'm with you. I think next week is when it could go down.
Just feels
yes or no.
Okay.
He's in two-tone blue.
Ooh, man. I will say yes, because the only team that I think that can swoop him in and take him that hasn't been discussed right now is the 49ers, because the 49ers have a need for more weapons, especially if you're going to be playing a rookie quarterback. and they have $17 million in cap space, something the Titans do not. They have the ability to absorb all of that contract for this year. That's the only way I see it happening, because all the other teams that are rumored to be wanting Julio Jones and that are reportedly in the Julio Jones sweepstakes are all in a salary cap bind.
Yeah.
They're all in the same boat there. It makes more sense in Tennessee. I don't think the Falcons are going to trade him within the NFC. It wouldn't make much sense. It wouldn't be good business-wise to put him in a conference that you play in. So, yes, unless the 49ers swoop in there in the 11th hour, Julio Jones will be a Tennessee Titan.
I agree with you. I think they get it done. I think they figure it out.
Feels so right.
It does. I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it works out. All right, real quick, let's get to our locks of the week and then talking with TD coming up next, and then you'll hear the NBA at 8 o'clock. We'll join In Progress here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Luka and the Mavs taking on the Clippers. My lock of the week is going to be the Tampa Bay Lightning going up 3-1 in the series. They are minus 162. Give me Tampa Bay. Not Tampa Bay, but Tampa Bay.
Champa Bay.
Champa Bay. It's been a very good year for that city.
Very much so.
Except the Raptors let them down, but, you know, that's okay.
They let them down so bad, they're not letting them back next
year.
Yeah,
they kicked them out. Back to Canada, maybe. Give me Tampa Bay minus 162. Okay. What's your lock?
I like that. This morning my lock was Clippers over Mavs tonight, but I'm going to give you something else. We're going to keep it in the NBA. Sixers -2.5. There's a slim chance that Embiid plays, and if he does, the line's going to go up. But whatever it is, you still take it because the Sixers are still really good. They're the forgotten about team in the East. The Hawks, a little bit of an emotional series, a physical series against the Knicks. I like the Sixers. Give me the three-point shooting. Give me the defense. Give me the experience in the playoffs to at least cover the 2.5, which is what it's at right now, and even more if Joel Embiid is healthy and clear to play.
Okay, I like it. There you go. He is Elijah Campbell. You can hear him usually as a part of our show, Darren Donick and Chase, weekdays from 10 to 2. Ryan will be back in the fold next week. If you miss anything, you can check it out at thegamenashville.com. And be sure to join me tomorrow morning at 9 for Chasing Checkers. The Cup Series champion Chase Elliott will join the show. Of course, he was on with Darren Donick and Chase earlier this week. We'll talk about that. Plus, racing at Sonoma. And I give you more picks, Sunday Money, at the end of every show. That's going to do it. Talking with TD is next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.